Well, it's great to be here, and great to be here with so many young people, and I commend you for having a forum that starts to focus on the challenges of changing a culture of an institution that has been historically shaped by men and is confronted with the need to change as ever more women make their way into the active duty ranks. So it's great to see you here. I wanted to give you a little background as you're thinking about women's leadership and changing the culture of an organization that we have tremendous respect for, and yet I certainly am becoming ever more aware of the need for these great organizations to really look hard at themselves and think about change, to talk a little bit about what brought me to Congress. So 7 years ago, it's been just 7 years ago that I've been in office, I decided to run for Congress when this seat opened up. I had never been a candidate myself. My husband had, we'd spent our entire adult life in one campaign or another. My husband previously held this congressional seat, went on to run for the United States Senate and be a senator, was a presidential candidate in 1992. So I felt I had a great familiarity with running, with political life and political service, and was inspired by my own parents' service through the military, their deep commitment to their country. But when this seat opened, I had never really imagined that I might be a candidate myself, but when this seat opened up, I made a split-second decision to run because it had been 25 years since a woman had been successfully elected to Congress in this Commonwealth. And by the bottom line is women can't win if women don't run. And it was a tough election. There are a lot of other people who had high ambitions to hold this office, but eventually I was successful and have been ever grateful to be in Congress. Despite everything we see and read, it's still a remarkable opportunity to make a difference in the lives of the people that we represent and that we serve. And here in Massachusetts, in those intervening years, in those 7 years, we've seen a lot of change in women's ability to seek and be elected to office. So we now have a United States Senator who's a woman. We have another Congresswoman who was elected just last year. And our state elections elected women to office in virtually every seat but the governorship. So as they made a decision to run, they did win. And we now have a woman as treasurer, or we will in January, as treasurer, as auditor, as attorney general, and the lieutenant governor, the future lieutenant governor, is a woman as well. So tremendous change making its way through the ranks of political office here and political service here in Washington. And when I first got to here in Massachusetts, when I first got to Washington, though, people would ask me, what's it like? And especially women were very interested. And this is an institution now that will have 100 women, finally, as we're all sworn in between the two houses, the two branches. We'll have 100 women in office come this January. So the numbers are growing slowly but surely, and they're growing on both sides of the aisle, which is great to see. But people used to ask me when I got there what it was like, and that's true. Congress is also an institution that has historically been shaped by men. It's only in recent years that ever more women are being elected. And the only time we ever really come together on the floor is when we were called to vote on the floor of the House. And as I made my way to the floor of the House in those early years, I used to say it was like going from the playing field to the locker room. There was a kind of energy to it that really felt very much shaped by men. And that's the reality. But as ever more women are making their way into these institutions, we are forcing change simply by our presence there and the kind of issues that we insist upon confronting. So as given my experience and the fact that I was the product of the Air Force, that my father had served, I felt I had a familiarity with at least that branch of the services, deep respect for it, so I sought out a seat on House Armed Services. And I did that not only because of that familiarity, but also I know my district has a great tradition of service. It's multi-generational in nature. It goes back throughout the history of our country. Wherever I go, I meet people who can reference somebody who is serving or who has served over the many, many wars, or even just in peacetime as well. We don't have a lot of bases, but we have a lot of companies that do work with the Defense Department. And I also felt that it was a committee that needed greater diversity. And in time, we have ever more women serving, and now we have a good number of women who have actually served in active duty as well. So it's great to see more and more women coming onto that committee. And it is the women who have brought attention to some of the long-neglected issues. So the issue of military sexual trauma. I came to that issue very early on. I would say I'd been in office a couple of weeks. I'm on the Military Personnel Subcommittee, and we had a hearing in which all the services came forward to talk about their programs to prevent sexual assault in the military. And I have to say, I was astonished that it seemed to me that it was an issue that would require this kind of hearing with a general officer making the case as to how each service was the work they were doing to prevent sexual assault. A month or two later, I went to a Wounded Warrior luncheon on the Capitol. I walked into a room full of young people who generally been egregiously hurt physically, and made my way to the side of the room where there were several women. There were only several women in the room, and as I was the only female member of Congress, I felt I should go over and say hi. So we went over. We were talking and about their experiences and what brought them to this particular luncheon. And then as we sort of got through that, I said, you know, we just had this hearing on sexual assault in the military. I said, is it as egregious as and pervasive as that hearing would suggest? And one of the women was a nurse. She'd been deployed a good number of times, both to Iraq and Afghanistan. She said, ma'am, I'm more afraid of my own soldier than I am of the enemy. And to protect herself as she traveled around wherever she happened to be located, she always had a knife in her waistline, in her to protect herself. She'd never been assaulted, and she was never going to be assaulted. Well, that was a wake-up call for me. It really validated that this was an issue that we needed to confront. Coincidentally, Congressman Mike Turner, a Republican from Ohio, had a constituent whose daughter was raped. She asked her commander if she could be transferred out of her unit because she was serving with her assailant and felt deeply threatened by that, their proximity. That request was denied, and she was subsequently murdered. And this was quite an issue for his district. And so he was starting to look at this issue at the same time. And the two of us were sort of traveling in parallel paths, found each other, and over the course of the last 5 years, have filed legislation every year that makes its way into the Defense Authorization Bill and has been made into law and has led to the implementation of some serious reforms. And we will stay at this because it's not just about the specifics of the reforms. Across the many issues, the way I look at it, we both look at it a little differently. We tend to frame it a little differently, but that anybody is assaulted, those who seek to serve are assaulted, is the initial betrayal. The way in which the chain of command deals with it is the second betrayal, the too often a history of just sweeping these issues under the rug. The third issue is if you have the guts to come forward, the kind of retaliation that you experience both professionally and personally. And then finally, the Uniform Code of Military Justice has, in some instances, really stacked the deck against those who come forward. And then finally, as you make your way into the VA, sort of reflects, I think, the long history of not necessarily taking these crimes as seriously as they should, as well as the long-term impact. So we've both come at this. We're working very hard at it, and it's shared with many other members on the committee, primarily women, who we all keep looking at this, and every year as we learn yet something else, we try to make a difference. But it's not just about that. I also took an interest in body armor. I have a congressional fellow every year that comes out of one of the services. And early on, we had a young captain out of the Army who told me that the body armor was great, very protective, but too heavy. And so we started to look at challenging and finding a way to put money into research and developing lighter weight body armor. And we've had some success. And in a follow-on hearing, I just, off the top of my head, asked a question, have you ever developed body armor for women? And the answer was no, they hadn't even thought about it. And that year, we injected some language into the NDAA that has led to the development of body armor that is better suited to women. So I've made many trips to Afghanistan and Iraq, six actually to Afghanistan. And I was there a couple of years ago, and two young officers came up to me to thank me for the work I'd done on getting women's body armor. But they said, did you know we're issued men's shoes? So I tell you this story to give you an example of the ways in which gender is not taken into account. I don't think it's an intentional, I just think it never challenged to think about it. The other thing we did is we included language 1 year just to be sure women's health services were adequate, and got a report back that suggested generally that they were. There were some shortcomings, but nevertheless. And now as we're confronting, and I think it's long overdue, women in combat, I think it's the women members who will make sure that this is rolled out in a way that isn't inherently discriminatory. I think you have to be very, very careful. Natick Soldier Systems, which is in my on the border of my district, but which I do a lot of work with, given that I am now the only member from Massachusetts that is on the Armed Services Committee, has been tasked to develop the physical standards for every combat-related position. But one of the people who has led the charge there said to me, one of the issues is going to be, do you train women in the same way to meet those standards? Because what you don't want to do is have a training regime that doesn't recognize that there are differences in our bodies. And we can get there if you want to get there, but maybe not through the same training regimen. And so that is something that I know personally I'm going to pay attention to as we move forward, because I don't want you all, anybody who has that interest, have the system be such that you're not going to succeed. We want to give everybody the opportunity to succeed in that context. So it's made a difference as women are in Congress to bring out these issues. We just had a hearing on Iraq the other day, and the Chief of Staff, General Dempsey, was there. Actually reading on the radio today. He's today in Iraq. He's there for the first time. And as more and more women are coming into Congress and onto the Armed Services Committee, you've seen real change. So, for example, there are 7 subcommittees on the Armed Services Committee, 4 of them on the Democratic side, means we're the ranking member, we're the lead Democrat, are led by women. So whether it's the Readiness Subcommittee, the Tactical Air and Land Subcommittee, the Military Personnel Subcommittee, and I am the ranking member on Oversight and Investigations. So 4 out of 7 subcommittees are now led by women in the Armed Services Committee. And that would not happen if we were not elected in the first place and then sought out and were appointed to the Armed Services Committee. And then as we serve, we are in a position to ask the hard questions and address not all the issues in general, but with, I think a special alertness to the fairness in the ways in which these issues are dealt with. And actually, I was very proud that in this hearing with General Dempsey just the other day, the Washington Post, in writing its story, really only quoted women members. So it was a good thing to see. I kind of took note of it as I was working my way through the story. It shows you the kind of change that's coming. But it's true in broader issues as well. You'll see it in the Armed Services Committee, and I'm sure it makes its way through all the other committees of the House of Representatives. And the story that really tells it more than anything else is the National Institutes of Health every year is doing tremendous research on various different ways of curing whatever illnesses, and for years never had a woman in their trials. So it was only as more women were making their way into the Congress that we took a look at that, and this predates my time. We took a look at that and said, this is outrageous. We have very different systems. You've got to look at women as a discrete group, not just to presume that everything that you find that works for men is going to work in the same way for women. So the value of women in an institution like Congress is not dissimilar to the value of women in the institutions that you all seek to serve. And this makes its way in the particulars, but it also makes its way more broadly. And so one of the issues we're now confronting as a country is the whole issue of wage stagnation. And I was just listening to an article, a story today as I was driving in about the challenge that that presents. But some of the substance that we have been talking about as we've made our way through this year's election was the whole issue of the minimum wage. Two-thirds of minimum wage earners are women. The whole notion that there are still many instances in which women do not get equal pay for equal work, and we still don't have a proper remedy to address that. The fact that as women are seeking to really get a toehold in the workplace and rise up through the ranks of whatever their particular profession is, that the cost of affordable child care often drives women out of the workplace more than men. So all of those issues, if you combine them, have a disproportionate impact on women's economic well-being and by extension on the family's economic well-being. So again, it's the women who are bringing these issues to the forefront, even as obviously in order to be successful on any of them, you need to generate broader support across the Congress and across a country. So it's wonderful to see so many women here thinking hard about how to lead and help be part of a very important institution. But the bottom line is your presence alone is going to make a huge difference. Because you are going to inevitably bring a different style and have a different interest on certain issues that will lead to broad change. But it doesn't happen overnight. But the fact that you're thinking about it, that you're committed to service, I think foreshadows real change. But as I said, it takes time, it takes thought. We in Congress never have the opportunity as women to come together and sort of talk more broadly about the challenges we face as women in that institution. The one thing we do know is we get equal pay for equal work, because that's the nature of it. But beyond that, we just bring who we are, we work our way through the power structure, we bring the issues that we care about to the forefront, and have to rise and fall on the basis of the kind of trust we engender and the support we get from our constituents. So it's a remarkable opportunity that to be in Congress is it's a remarkable opportunity to serve your country in the military, and I thank you all for it. So I'd love to just open it up to your questions. I'm happy to answer whatever's on your mind, and it's great to see General Snow here, who has taken on a very tough issue, but I appreciate that the Defense Department and the military, different branches of the services are fully engaged on the issue of sexual assault in the military. I know it's early, but come on, ask me a question.
This is my first class of Jane from the Naval Academy. You talked about the environment. It was like the locker room going into Congress. How did it change when Congresswoman Pelosi became the speaker? Because you were in Congress before she took over. Did the environment for the whole organization seem shift a little bit when a woman was in the top position of power?
I don't think it changed that basic dynamic that you see on the floor of the House on those instances in which we all come together. I don't think it particularly changed that, but it's symptomatic of the change that's occurring within the institution, that she is now, was the Speaker of the House, is now the minority leader. As I referenced the leadership positions that women are on Armed Services Committee, the House of Representatives has what are called exclusive committees. Armed Services is not one of them, although it's a highly sought-after committee. But there are exclusive committees, Ways and Means, for example, that deals with taxation, financial services, Rules Committee. There are four of them. And two of the four are now led by women, and there's a hotly fought race over leadership on the third one, in which a woman may well win. So what that tells you is women not only are our numbers growing, but we are ever more poised to assume leadership positions broadly across the institution.
With all of these issues on gender, how do you approach it to not seem like a feminist? A lot of times I when discussions are brought up with males or females or anyone, a lot of times people can tend to think you're just complaining when you're trying to make change as a female instead of understanding the actual.
It's probably not the best way. I ignore it. I frankly you just kind of march through. But I do think that there's a value in giving voice to those issues, and how you do it is probably very important. So, you know, even as I don't spend a lot of time talking about an institution that ignored all these issues. For example, as we're talking about in the Air Force, I don't come to Congress and say it's a shame that we didn't do X, Y, Z on these issues. I come and I say we didn't do X, Y, Z, so let's change it. And let's just move forward. Let's work on sexual assault in the military. Let's work on making sure your equipment is suited to who you are. Let's work on the issue that the fact that you haven't had access and couldn't compete for combat-related positions. Let's just address it. And the fact that our numbers are greater makes it easier to do. So that's part of it, is to sort of draw yourselves together and say, let's just work on fixing this, as opposed to, and I'm not saying you don't occasionally have to give voice to the fact that this would never happen were it not for the fact that you are a woman, but nevertheless, I think the strength in numbers has to be channeled and used to produce change. Yeah,
ma'am, what's the best part about being a female
Congresswoman? Just being in Congress. It's a great thing to be in Congress, and I have to say I feel just a little bit of pride for having run 7 years ago when Massachusetts hadn't elected a woman in 25 years. It wasn't an accident, however, that my district was able to sort of overcome that hurdle. My seat was held, the seat that I now hold, was held by a woman from 1925 to 1960. She actually was one of the co-authors of the GI Bill, and she was chairwoman of the Veterans Committee when she served. So, and she still is the longest serving female member of the House of Representatives, as well as the fact that my district has elected women at the state level for state representative and state senator across the board, generally across the board. So there was an openness in that district to electing women, but it had been 25 years, and a lot of sort of commentary on how difficult it was for women to get elected in Massachusetts, and I just honestly was so not angry, just felt that this moment came, felt I could do it. I didn't know how tough it would be, but once you make that decision, you start out, you can't stop till you're across the finish line. And having made our way, and the reality was when I decided to run, four others ran and there was another woman, which I actually always thought was great. There should be as many women running as who want to run. You know, we need to compete with each other as much as we need to compete with our male counterparts. So I felt a little flash of pride. And it's great to see now Massachusetts much more open to electing women. But the reality is when you get there, you do the job of a congressperson. Another little story. So I was elected in a special election, which means you don't come in as a class. You kind of just, it's like being a transfer student into college or whatever. You kind of get thrown in. And so we had a young intern out at the office, and he answers the phone, and he said, you know, what do you want me to call you, congressman or congresswoman? I said, I am what I am. I fought hard to be here. I am a congresswoman. So from then on, you simply have to do the job. And the great challenge is to do it well and to take on all the issues that you have to learn. I often say that, and I saw it in my husband many years ago when he was in Congress, you don't arrive as a member of Congress. You earn the right to become one. Because the becoming is really important. You all are becoming officers. It takes time to learn all the issues you're going to have to deal with, to learn your leadership style, to understand how you're just going to work in this environment. And it's been a great thrill to have that opportunity, but I've also really enjoyed the challenge of it. Every day is something new that I have to think about, whether it's on, you know, just the simple things of running an office to the most important things, such as, you know, what's our appropriate stance in Iraq and Syria. So, huge array of issues. It's a thrill to be there. There's a tremendous opportunity to make a difference in the life of your country and of your constituents.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yeah.
Ma'am, do you find peers in Congress that are advocates for gender equality? And if so, can you speak a little bit to the role and importance of men advocating for these type of issues?
Well, what I can talk about more specifically is a very important role Congressman Mike Turner has played in addressing the issue of military sexual trauma. It's not just that we are across the aisle in this, both Republican and Democrat, but I think the fact that he as a man has taken this issue very, very seriously has helped us to implement the many reforms that we have. So there's no denying of the importance of men's voices on these issues as well as women's. Women, you know, we don't have the numbers. We have more of us who can bring these issues forward. But in terms of generating the support, the majority support you need to bring change, you need men and women. And for example, the whole issue of equal pay for equal work, men should care about that. The reality is that many families are dependent upon the income of both earners, men and women. And if women are getting equal pay for the same paid job that a man is doing, that helps the family unit. So that's an issue that both sides should care about. Or minimum wage earners, if you're in a family in which the minimum wage earner is the woman, and it hasn't changed in years, to change that means that helps the family unit. So these are issues that are not unique to women, but it's often women, because they disproportionately impact women, that will bring them forward. But in the end, they immediately impact women, but more broadly, they impact men and women alike. So it's very important to get support on, you know, from all sides, both sides of the aisle, and in terms of gender as well. Well, thank you all for being here. Great to be here. I commend you all for your service, and thank you for it.
Thank you.